I came prepared. Hi, my name is Stacy. I'm a recovered addict and alcoholic. Thanks, Noodles, for the awesome intro music. And Jennifer, thank you for, I think, the best way to tell someone they've really pissed you off ever. My sobriety date is, I always have to be reminded, but it's September 21st of 2019. So if you were in here for the sobriety countdown, you know that I am still a baby in this room. Because the people here have been here for, 700 years. The rest of us are just showing up now. But the big book really, it lays it out really nice. Like, if someone asks you to speak, you're supposed to say what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So, I mean, I spoke not too long ago at a meeting, and I was like, everybody raise your hand if you've ever felt like you don't fit, or you don't belong, or you said you would quit drinking and then started back up again, or same but with drugs. And like, all of us were raising our hands because we've all felt that way. But what it was like to be Stacy, like, I don't know, it was just felt pretty normal. I was raised by a single mom who, I'm not gonna lie, I kind of have a bit of a hero complex for her, because that can't be easy. Being a single mom in the 70s and 80s with a tomboy of a kid, and really all you wanted was a ballerina. I started with the difficulties long before I even knew about it. But my memories are very vague from the time I was young, but I was always like a good kid because I never felt like I fit anywhere. But I was also really outgoing and a great student and all of these overachieving things that come with being an only child. And, I can probably look back then and say, oh yeah, I was just probably an alcoholic in the making, because, that we all have that thing in common where we just want to fit somewhere. And I had no way to do that. I didn't know how to. It wasn't like I had a family or we were with our relatives. I had nowhere but with her. And the really awesome part of that, though, is for a long time, that really worked for us. I was a good kid. I kind of hit this addict, alcoholic stuff pretty late in life. And I think that's a testament to growing up with someone who does not suffer from mental illness or alcoholism and addiction. When I got out in the real world, it was like, oh, good morning. I didn't have anything spectacular in my childhood as I thought. Like, I was pretty happy. I went to my first concert on my 10th birthday to see New Kids on the Block. Like, the coolest stuff ever. And that's the stuff I remember. Like, I don't remember any of the really terrible things that apparently is something that we're supposed to remember from the time we're two. My therapist told me that last week. I was like, oh, well, I don't have that. She said, well, maybe that's a good thing. It was pretty unremarkable until I got into college and I decided to stay near home. It was funny because for the first time in my life, I didn't go to class, I didn't know how to study, and a lot of people were like drinking and using drugs, and I hadn't really done a lot of that in high school, because even the kids that I was fake friends with, I didn't really have any real friends. Like, I'm not the person who can come up here and say, oh, we've known each other since fifth grade. I don't have any of that in my life. I don't have people from high school that I keep in touch with. I don't know how to have relationships. This program teaches me these things in the present moment. And so, the people that I connect with the most are the people up here who are starting this journey too. And the people who have been here for the whole time are the ones who help us to do that. But we're the ones who find it so difficult because we don't know how to connect. Or at least I don't, because that's my experience. so, you know, like, I went off to college, and wouldn't you know, like, the miracle of alcohol and drugs existed in my life. All of a sudden, I flunked out after, like, one semester. It kind of, I don't know if anyone else has ever done that, where you go, thank you, you go to college, and suddenly, you have no rules. And that was kind of the first time that it happened for me. I can look back and see different times in life where it was like, oh yeah, I was really bad at that one point. And then it was like, oh, but that one too, and that one too. But, you know, so the start of college was one of those times for me. And then I was, you know, since I dropped out, I might as well go back to that bartending job, because that was always nice in the back pocket to have that job to fall back on. So when you're working from, you know, 2 in the afternoon until 11 o'clock at night, and all of your friends are doing the same, and you kind of get into a habit of doing the same things. The interesting part is, like, they could all just go home and be normal, and, like, I was there until closing time. Or until I couldn't get a hold of anybody, if you know what I mean. And so, like, other people, they could just kind of put it down, go home, and go back to their lives. And I was, you know, obviously living back with my mom again. Poor my mom. And crawling through her door at 2:30 in the morning. I don't remember her ever saying a thing about it, though. She would go on work travels and come home to broken furniture. And when I say that now, I think of that line in the Big Book about people breaking your furniture and burning your mattresses. And for all the new people, I really strongly suggest that you find a sponsor here today so that they can tell you all about that story, too. So, you know, life just kind of went like that. I ended up pregnant, shocking, a drunk who ends up pregnant. And that slowed things down for me for a bit. It really did. When that happened, my mom stopped talking to me because, I mean, hey, my 22-year-old daughter is pregnant with, I don't know, some guy I never met's kid. Yeah, she didn't care that much for it. And so she pretty much cut me out. And that was new for me, because she was kind of the only person in my life for my whole life. And I didn't really know what to do with that. And so, you know, for a good lifetime, until a good sponsor got me on my fourth step and made me talk about it, that was really stuffed really far down. But I did all of the things. I quit drinking and doing drugs for a little bit. I found out I was pregnant, and I absolutely went out that night and got absolutely loaded on everything I could get my hands on. I mean, how ridiculous is that? I can guarantee that a normal person does not do that. I did. After that, I didn't use again until 2 weeks after he was born. Because I had to get my wisdom teeth pulled. And wouldn't you know, the doctor was prescribing pills for those back then. And that was kind of the start of a whole nother journey for me. I had another child, got married, went to nursing school. I was a nurse for a really, really long time. Side note, I'm not anymore. It turns out the state will take your license away if you do things you're not supposed to. But the fact of the matter is, I kind of did everything in what people would say is the wrong order. Except, you know, I look back now and everything happened exactly how it did. Because it was supposed to happen that way then. And so there's not a right way to do things. You made it here for a reason. And I just made it here a lot later than a lot of other people in this room. And the fact is, I was right on time, too, just like everybody else here. I heard someone pick up their chip yesterday, and they were saying something along the lines of, you know, don't keep coming back, just stay. And I'm like, yeah, that makes more sense to me. Like, I used to be so black and white, and that stay thing really is something I can relate to, because I will cut and run as soon as I see trouble. So I do urge you, like that awesome person yesterday, just to stay rather than keep coming back, because it takes me a while to come back, if you know what I mean. I don't really remember where I was, but I'm pretty sure I was talking about how I lost my nursing license and all these terrible things, found myself with a bunch of felonies, and you know, that seems just kind of regular to me now. At the time, that was just another reason for me to be sneaky, manipulative, continue drinking and using, lying to judges and all the people that I was around. I went to detox literally because I had gotten caught red-handed stealing drugs from my work, and they said, go to detox. You'll get in less trouble. Okay. So that's what I did. And I'll tell you what, it worked for 92 days. That first time I stayed sober for 92 days, which if you're sober for one day is a really long time. Does that mean I had all the tools, or I knew what was going on, or I knew what I should do? No. I'm going to give you quick cliff notes. I still have no idea what I'm doing. What I have now that I didn't have then is this book of awesome instructions and a higher power that book led me to. And so the reason why I'm such a big book thumper, annoyingly so, is because it led me to God. And like, that's the only thing that will give you your life back. And when they say you get your life back, they mean the whole thing. I don't mean like a little bit here and there. It's not on our time, it's on our higher power's time too. But what I can tell you is that when I think about how I went from detox, and after detox, like, it got only worse. So like, there was the opiate phase that I had with alcohol, and when I got to detox, they're like, oh, this is what you were doing all day, and then you were drinking all night, and I was like, how did you know that? They're like, well, we can tell. You sweat at this time, you're shaking at this, they're like, oh, I can't even lie. Because they give you all these medications to help you through. And of course I'm trying to get as much of those as possible. But because they've known 9,000 other people just like me, they were like, yeah, nice try though. So fine, I'll go to IOP then. I can't say that IOP in the time that I was in it did a whole bunch for me, but I can look back on it and see that the reason I was there was because they made me go to 12-step meetings. I had to go to X amount of meetings a week, and those were kind of the people that, I mean, I lied to them for a while too, so those were the people who, when I actually was ready, those were the people that I had to tell on myself to. Which I don't think they're in here, but that's okay. When I told, I was told that I was going to be kicked out of the couch I was staying on, because I probably didn't mention I was jobless and homeless for a good 4 years. And so the couch I was staying on was in a really nice apartment for the first time in a while. And it was kind of near these 12-step meetings I had started going to. I wasn't really going all that much. I mean, obviously, I was still getting drunk every day. So I had wasted my 401k. I had gotten off on all those felonies with just like 4 years of probation. Like, wow. That never happens, by the way. Especially when, you know, you lied your way through everything, which I don't know if anyone else has ever lied. But I can say in my experience I have. But the fact is, those people, when I actually got serious, were the ones that I called when I was so depressed after getting sober, because whatever science has to do with everything, like, I've never been more depressed in my life as when I was 30 days sober. And I wanted nothing more than to drive to work, drive home, stop at the liquor store on my way home because I was going to be home alone. So I called these people from these meetings, and they would talk to me the whole way home. And there was this one lady, her name was Sarah. I don't remember why or how I could possibly know that. The only time I ever talked to her was I called her because I knew I was going to stop at the liquor store if I didn't call somebody. And she answered her phone. Like, I purposely called her because I only got her number once. I had never called her before, so she wouldn't answer for sure, right? Well, she answered, and then I couldn't stop because I knew she would know that ding when you open the door and there's that ding. Like, well, now I can't stop. I have somebody who definitely knows what the ding is, and she answered her phone. And I made it home sober that day. And, you know, like, that's how God works in my life now. Or that's how God worked in my life then. God works in totally different ways now. I didn't have any tools to, like, breathe by myself at that point, to be perfectly honest. But the fact of the matter is, I was introduced to the fellowship of CA, kind of by accident, by someone that I was really close with at the time, who is, we'll just say, really an interesting person. Maybe a little hyper and excited and stuff like that. I could really relate to it at the time. Changed my entire life. I walked into the rooms of CA when I was like, I think I was at maybe 60 days. The real time I got sober, not the times I was talking about before. The real time, when I wasn't lying, when I had to get honest with the original people that I had to tell on myself to. The fellowship of CA saved my life, and that's just a fact of my existence. This fellowship that I was introduced to was a teeny tiny meeting of like six people in the middle of nowhere at the Lake Area Club. Keep in mind, this is pre-COVID. We're meeting in a teeny tiny little room, and there's these, and I mean, the people in that room had been sober forever. 30 some years, 14 years. I'm like, oh my God, these people have been sober longer than I've been alive. The 38 years, I mean, I might be exaggerating. I mean my age, not the 38 years. But the fact of the matter was, there was one person in particular, and when she started talking about the big book, she turned into this whole other person. And I was like, I have got to know what it is that she's talking about. I honestly had no interest in much about her other than this person she turned into when she talked about the big book. So when I asked her, it took me a couple months to get the guts to ask because, you know, I was busy socializing in big, large rooms like this one, not letting anyone actually get to know me, but definitely talking a good talk and not making relationships with anybody and kind of sticking close to the chest. It was in those little rooms where I actually learned some things about the book and about what a life on a path of recovery looks like. And I only got to do that by watching these other people because I had never experienced it before. So when I asked that lady who lit up about the big book to take me through the steps, I said, so I don't want you to be my sponsor. Just to be clear, I don't want you to be my sponsor, but can you take me through the book? Because every time you talk about it, like, you light up. And she looked at me and she goes, yeah, the entire job of a sponsor is to take you through the steps. Oh, obviously I didn't know that. So it turns out that's like the entire definition. And she took me through the steps in a way that was very much like school. And she had me like defining words that were in the big book in 1939, that the definition of those words are different today. And so she made sure I knew the difference. And I mean, I can't lie, Dan, you're gonna love this. I went through the steps super quick with her. The lady that I had as my sponsor before kind of did the step work via the 12 and 12, and I don't know, I really didn't, and some pamphlets and stuff. And wonderful person though, who's been sober for way longer than me. My experience, that wouldn't work for me, because as we were going through the steps, she was one of the people I was lying to, right? So this lady who took me through the steps, you know, she was like, I need 2 hours of your time on this day, and this day. And I was like, okay, you're kind of scaring me. And yes, I'll meet with you on Zoom. It was COVID, cut some slack a little. Because, you know, but now we know what a great tool Zoom is. Shameless plug for H&I. If you ever want to meet with your sponsor, get a hold of one of us. We'll give you our Zoom account information. Thanks. So this lady got me through the steps pretty quick. And then I kind of figured I knew everything, which I'm, you know, I don't. I know less now than I did then. I can tell you that for sure. And the book kept me sober and really involved for a good amount of time. And I'll be honest, I didn't use it as the tool that it really is set out to be. Because what it's set out to do is to clear your path to your higher power. And when you do that, your actions and your whole life change, and your surroundings change, and everything about your being changes. And I can be pretty honest when I say not much changed after I went through the steps, because I wasn't using the tools that I was so freely given to me. Until I was at a retreat and I was miserable sober. I had been sober for 18 months and my life was just like an utter chaos. And I don't know, I certainly was not happy ever. And I ended up at this retreat with all of these strangers, all of these CA people who I hadn't met because it was COVID. So like I knew me and the people who went to this one meeting, and that was everybody, except that was like this much of all of these amazing people that I hadn't gotten to meet yet. Until I got to this retreat in East Troy, Wisconsin, and going somewhere with a bunch of strangers is really like my perfect example of how I can act my way through anything. But there was something about the people there, and there was one person in particular who was like so bubbly and like, she had me super fooled. She looked like she had it together and she was, I don't know, she was just radiant and fun and you might know her. We made deals about how we were gonna go to each other's meetings and all of her meetings were in Milwaukee. Well, I was still living in the sticks and knew four people. And so I was like, yeah, you know, you come out to my meeting, I'll go to yours. And somewhere before I left, I was screaming at God in my head because I was miserable and I just needed something different and I had no idea what that looked like. I just knew that I was miserable sober, almost as bad as when I was miserable while I was using. And as I screamed to God on my cot at Timber Lee, it was almost like something shifted because I started going to different meetings and meeting different people. And I went to this meeting on Saturday mornings that, you know, I met some people there that were like, oh my God, they were like family. They fought with each other and then they would let us watch them make up. And I was like, people do that? I don't know how to do that. Bye. And it was so cool that these people let me be a part of, and at the time mostly just observe, what families really look like. I have no experience with that up to that point. And so when Jennifer got up here and said how I challenged her, I asked her to be my sponsor because these people were real people. And they had no problem being like, you know what? This is why I'm mad at you. And I love you, and I'll see you next week. And I'm like, nice. My life changed really fast, really, really, really fast after this CA family took me under their whole umbrella within 6 months, I had moved to Milwaukee. I had a full-time job. Someone was dumb enough to rent to me. It's crazy. I wish I could say that had anything to do with me, but it did not. Because the people in the rooms where I now was frequenting are huge about H&I and reaching out and helping others. And that's something that I've always been really like, yeah, let's do that. But it's like my entire reason for existence. So it's pretty cool that that's exactly the reason why I'm able to stay sober. It's like a twofer. And so coming and moving to Milwaukee, like I'm from Iguanago, okay? So I had to absolutely be like, it's a really nice neighborhood. Because when you say you're from Milwaukee, like everyone assumes, you know, where we all were visiting. That's what I assumed. But the fact of the matter is, Milwaukee's a great place. Everywhere in it. Doesn't matter where you are. Milwaukee rocks. The most amazing people I've ever met in my whole life live here. The CA Fellowship got me involved in more service work than I could even handle. I don't know if anyone in that first year of their sobriety can relate to that, but I know if I've taken you through the book, you can. I kind of got to everything a little late in recovery too, because like I think a bunch of people here, we just know everything already, and we're just going to change our surroundings, change the people around us or whatever, and since I already know everything, I don't really have to do anything different. Except your whole life will change when you do. Every single thing. Things will feel different to you in every way, and it is so scary all the time. But the tools in this book help you with tasky things in order to get to the God part. And then you just go to the God part first. It's like, oh, what a relief. But the fact of the matter is, I'm totally still a human being. And so by working with other people, I get outside of myself. And so trust me when I say that the more selfish I'm being, the more of an asshole I am, the more people are going to call me and ask me to sponsor them because I need to be in the book worse than they do. And that happens a lot, which is a testament to my personality flaws, I'm sure. But the fact of the matter is, the CA Fellowship showed me what family looks like. They gave me tools to help other people, showed me a way to God, and the H&I committee that they have in this fellowship, which I've become a big part of, all we want to do is spread the message of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The people in this fellowship know this book better than anyone I've ever met, and now I've actually met real people. And so, find who you connect with. If it's somebody that you met here today and you were like, oh my gosh, that person's like a little ray of sunshine, go up and get their phone number. Guys, please do that too with other guys. Thank you. It's true. The fact of the matter is, not a single person that I met from treatment is still in my life, but I wasn't in residential. I did never live with anyone. I didn't have a roommate. My experience with that was on a pretty shallow level, and my entire existence is with you guys. And so when I say get a sponsor, get in the book, I mean it. I don't care how long it takes, it'll save your life. And then you giving that to other people will save your life every single day until the day you die. I was reading A Quiet Peace, which it just so happens that H&I is going to be raffling those off. And I was like, yeah, you know, like if I go up there, I'm probably going to end up reading something because I always do. But the fact is, I only have one thing to read, and it's going to be at the very, very end of my talk. And What I can say is that the people in my life today have saved me from myself. They've shown me a God that I didn't know existed until I found this place. Dinners like this, where we all get together, they are literally the high point of our existence. And I literally, as I was just about, as Jennifer was just getting done talking, I realized that my favorite reading wasn't going to be read today, and Tina so nicely reminded me that we're at a meeting. And so I quick screenshotted my favorite reading, which is called Reaching Out, and I'm going to just end with that. Reaching out. I made it into this program because someone else worked their 12th step on me. Someone passed it on to me. Someone was out there after they got clean and sober, caring about others. I need to never, ever forget that. Had they simply gone on with their lives and forgotten about people like me who were still out there using and suffering, I wouldn't be here today. My gratitude begins with that fact. It is with that gratitude in mind that I reach out to others, especially the newcomer. I need to have them in my life. That is where my spirituality begins. For me, spirituality comes from caring about others. I have found that the more I focus on improving the quality of the lives of others, the less I am into myself and my will. I feel a freedom and peace from within. The gifts I am beginning to receive in my life are greater than I could have ever imagined. Something else I have done is that I have forgiven myself. I have forgiven myself for being an addict. I have forgiven myself for all of the damage I did to my life, to my physical health, and to my career and finances. But most of all, I have forgiven myself for all of the horrible, negative, and unloving things I have felt about myself. It was not until I offered and accepted my own forgiveness that I was truly able to grow in my sobriety. And with that, I'll pass.